My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big ROAS man. Then he just kept saying things like, the bigger the ROAS, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means calculating a return on ad spend. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the ROAS man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/MPN to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/MPN. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Gordon Glenister hosts an outstanding podcast called the Influence Global Podcast. Gordon, tell these fine folks what they're going to get when they listen.
We interview some amazing people from all around the world, whether they be influencers, content creators, brands, influencer platforms, anybody involved in the influencer industry. There's some fantastic guests that make a fine listen for you. You can find them on marketingpodcasts.net, or you can also find them on my own website, which is www.gordonglenister.com.
Or, of course, wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Nick Westergaard, and this is On Brand, helping you tell your story.
My guest this week is Matt Williams.
As brand people, we watch the behavior of brands every day. And we are strongly of the mind that what brands do is far more powerful than what they say. And we like calling out brands whose behavior and whose messages are consonant, are working together. And we also, unfortunately, found some brands whose behavior and you know what they say they are and what they do may not match up exactly.
Matt Williams is Chief Growth Officer for Brand Federation, a brand strategy consultancy in Richmond, Virginia. Prior to joining Brand Federation in 2019, Williams was CEO of the Martin Agency, one of the world's most recognized advertising agencies, where he managed strategy development for world-class brands like Geico, Oreo, UPS, Discover Financial, Walmart, and more. Williams also is a clinical professor in the marketing department at Mason School of Business at William & Mary. He teaches in the MBA program and is the developer and faculty director of the school's online master's in marketing. Matt, welcome to On Brand.
Thanks, Nick. Great to be here.
Well, I would be excited to chat with you any time of year, but especially at this, which some would refer to musically as the most wonderful time of the year. Yes. But what got my attention is that you've put out a naughty and nice list for brands in 2021. So talk a bit about where this unique idea came from.
Well, it's funny, Nick. It is definitely the most wonderful time of the year. So me and my partner, Kelly O'Keefe, who's the founder of Brand Federation, we're sitting talking about, like, well, what should we do to commemorate this time of year? We came up with the maybe obvious idea of creating a naughty and nice list because, you know, as brand people, we watch the behavior of brands every day. And we are strongly of the mind that what brands do is far more powerful than what they say. And we like calling out brands whose behavior and whose messages are consonant, are working together. And we also, unfortunately, found some brands whose behavior and you know what they say they are and what they do may not match up exactly. And that's the primary determinant for which list certain brands end up on. But it was a fun exercise to look back on the year.
Yeah. So where did you start with this undertaking? Did you scan the news? Did you look at brands? What went into the work of analyzing naughty and nice for the brand Santas that you and Kelly decided to become?
Exactly. Yes. We are the self-anointed Santas of the brand world. But so there's two sides to it, I think, Nick. One is there are brands that are just always in the news, that are always top of mind, like the Facebooks and the Elon Musks and the Teslas of the world. And I think it makes sense for us to sort of comment on where we think they stand in the world on the naughty or nice continuum. But we did go back, or I'll speak for myself. I did go back and, you know, spent a whole bunch of time online and looking through old news reports from brands that might have done things, you know, 8 months ago, 9 months ago, that had slipped through our memory, that you remind yourself of, oh yeah, I remember when that happened, that was awesome. Or, oh yeah, I remember when that happened, that was pretty naughty. So it was actually kind of a fun retrospective view of the year that we take in the research process too.
All right. Well, let's get into the list a little bit. And I suppose, as the phrase is, naughty and nice list, I guess one starts with naughty. And right there at the top of the naughty or nice list, we have Chevron. So
yes,
talk to us about Chevron.
So Chevron hit the news, a few months ago because of the very clear example that we think they provide of the dangers of greenwashing. And, you know, we're seeing more and more things in the news that are proving to us that the planet is in crisis, and that companies bear a big burden to make sure that their operations are part of the solution and not part of the problem. But in the process of that, there are certain companies that stand out as unfortunate avatars of greenwashing, of using weasel language to describe what they think they're doing to make the planet a safer place. And when what they say they're doing starts to raise some red flags is when you start to see language like reducing carbon intensity of your operations or putting us on a road to renewable fuel. And then you think, okay, wait a minute, what is Chevron actually doing? And when you dig a little deeper, unfortunately, what you find, to my earlier point, is that they're nice language that's designed to make me feel okay about them in light of climate change is really veiling kind of some behavior that's different from that. So you say we're reducing the carbon intensity of operations. Well, they're spending 0.2% of their total capital expenditures on lower carbon energy sources. And they're actually planning over the next decade to emit more carbon dioxide, or projecting that they will emit more carbon dioxide than they admit right now. So we called them out on the naughty list because they felt like a brand who is using some of this kind of weaselly language to get around accountability for doing what they need to do to be part of the solution to the crisis that the planet is in.
So that kind of classic mismatch of what you said of words and actions, probably compounded on by, I love that you brought up the weasel words, the weasel language that is, like you said, designed to obfuscate. So some classical naughty behavior. I always think about joking with kids, quasi threatening, of what will get you on the naughty list. But for marketers, that's a pretty classic, right up there with disobeying your parents or other things like that. But for marketers, it's that disconnect, and that's a pretty obvious example, pretty big example too.
Yeah, I think we have to acknowledge, Nick, that our words have power, and that we're in the business of changing the way people think and changing the way they behave by using our words to do that. And we have a responsibility to use the talent that we have in a way that's number one, honest, that's true, and that is good for the commonwealth of the world. And I think when we run afoul of that, we deserve to get called out.
So speaking of getting called out, someone that was called out this year that's also on the naughty list is Subway. So let's talk about what Subway is, or what Subway is not, at least their sandwiches.
What is
which
not. Exactly. That's what got them on the naughty list, Nick, is that what they are not. So an independent lab have found that there is no amplifiable tuna DNA in the Subway tuna sandwich. Let that sit with you for a second, right? On top of that, an Irish court ruled that Subway's bread has such a high sugar content that it's actually technically not bread. It's confectionery. So now marketing is not just the words we use, it's the behavior that we display, right? It's the decisions we make in terms of product development and how we build the things we sell. And the idea of a brand selling a tuna sandwich that has no tuna DNA in it and bread that is so bastardized that it's not classified as bread, I think that deserves a spot on the naughty list, the product development naughty list for the year.
Yeah, when you are defying the classification of something as simple as a sandwich, something is awry. Not right, but
for sure.
Perhaps not rye bread.
We thought, we laughed because we thought, well, maybe we can put Subway bread in our kid's stocking this year instead of the candy, because it seems to be the same thing. I don't know.
Yeah, there you go. Oh, for all those that have woken up on Christmas morning to a stocking full of Subway cookie bread, enjoy.
So leave a plate for Santa.
You know, that I guess that would be how you could lean into it. But boy, I don't know. Yeah. Now we've been making some jokes, but what you have as a more serious example, even so much so that you flag it as the naughtiest on the list, is Facebook. So let's talk about Facebook, Meta, all of the above.
Yeah, I think, and you're right, we have been joking, and I don't think this is joking. I think what Facebook has continually done to land itself on the naughty list is that they've felt like they've misrepresented what they know to be true about their service, about their product. They've gone down this road of rebranding to Meta, which, you know, who knows what the deep thinking behind that is, but I'm not sure it's going to obscure or change the conversation that we're having, even though maybe that's the motivation behind it. I can't speak to the motivation. But I think there is so much obviously wrong with the way Facebook works in our society, some of which is a reflection of Facebook's corporate policies, and some of which is a reflection, unfortunately, of us as human beings. But in either case, it's incumbent on Facebook to face up to that and to make the decisions they need to make to have their product be more than just an amplifier of the worst of humanity, to be more than a platform for misinformation, to be different than what it is. And at every turn, when they've had the opportunity to do that, they seem to have gone the other way. And for that, we think they are among the naughtiest of the naughty.
Well, and to kind of highlight that lesson too, that you just noted, as long as we're because I think what's behind a lot of this are things that we need to remember. I mean, you know, with the simple construct of naughty and nice, it can be guideposts for behavior. And what you just said there, every chance they've had to do something, and it's again back to our actions and our words, and they're like a twisted if this then that choose your own adventure. If there was a way to choose the not so great option every time, they seem pretty hell bent on continuing to do so.
They really do, and I think the point you just made is the crux of everything we believe about brands at Brand Federation, and that is that. Brands need to represent a set of values. They need to be positioned in a way that makes clear to the world what they're about, what they care about, what role they play in the world. But then they need to behave that way. Then they need to put their money where their mouth is. And that behavior is way more powerful than any ad they're ever going to run. And when we see brands behaving in a way that is antithetical to what they say they are. And in, unfortunately, too often in Facebook's case, is against the best interests of the Commonwealth, then that's not okay. Something's wrong here. Somewhere along the way, the priorities of the people at these companies who are making decisions have been co-opted by interests that are not in the best interests of the people that they purport to serve. And that's not okay. That's not what brands should be about.
On Brand, we'll be right back after this.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big ROAS man. Then he just kept saying things like, the bigger the ROAS, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means calculating a return on ad spend. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the ROAS man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/MPN to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/MPN. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Gordon Glenister hosts an outstanding podcast called the Influence Global Podcast. Gordon, tell these fine folks what they're going to get when they listen.
We interview some amazing people from all around the world, whether they be influencers, content creators, brands, influencer platforms, anybody involved in the influencer industry. There's some fantastic guests that make a fine listen for you. You can find them on marketingpodcasts.net, or you can also find them on my own website, which is www.gordonglenister.com.
Or, of course, wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, back to the show.
Okay, so as we segue from naughty to nice, kind of a perfect segue, I think, that you've built into the list, but is an interesting bit of contrast is on the naughty list, you have Elon Musk. On the nice list, we have Tesla. So talk about the Musk Tesla dichotomy here as related to the naughty and nice list.
It's so interesting, isn't it? The more we thought about it, the more it occurred to us that clearly somebody like Elon Musk can be an absolute genius, right? This guy is an off-the-charts genius. I don't think anybody would argue with that. Elon Musk has become a brand unto himself, as many celebrities do, and as some would argue, we all are. But he is a very prominent brand, obviously. And I think, unlike Tesla, the company that he founded and has built into one of the most valuable companies on Earth, Elon's behavior has not really been worthy of that of a genius technologist who built a valuable company. He feels more like an angry 13-year-old than that. And the idea of him, you know, using the platform that he has on Twitter to pick fights, most recently with, you know, Elizabeth Warren. Now, that may be good for both of them. My sense is both of them probably like that, because it gives them the stage that they want. But manipulating cryptocurrency and coming out with all kinds of crazy takes on the world on Twitter, it makes me think, man, this guy has done so much good in terms of Tesla, which we can talk about. But his personal brand, to my mind, is pretty naughty and is suffering from what seems to be kind of a perpetual state of juvenile crankiness.
But then you've got almost like the old saying of success in spite of, because in looking at, you know, Facebook's a great parallel or contrast, because there you have a naughty company, and I guess I would argue, even though it's not on your list as such, you've got some some naughty leadership there in the Mark Zuckerberg side of things. But yet with Elon Musk, I think you've drawn a unique contrast between the naughtiness of the leadership of the founder, but also on Tesla's side that you can have a nice brand. It seems like it's maybe not something that's common, but it's certainly interesting. So how does Tesla get beyond that and make its way to the nice list?
Yeah, I think there's a couple things going on here, Nick. One is that Elon's genius, as manifested by Tesla, is to me it's unbelievably interesting, right? So the experience that Tesla has built, the design that they've built into their cars, the buying and owning experience that they've created, has been an amazing example of what can happen when a company has the vision that they've had to look at all the pain points that live along the continuum of the experience people have with auto purchasing and ownership, and say, we're going to fix all those things. And in the process, we're also going to design and engineer a car that is 100% electric and can put us on the road to sustainable energy. That's pretty amazing. And by the way, driving these things is an unbelievable experience. I'm a proud Tesla owner, and it is an amazing car. So the experience you have with Tesla in all those ways leads it to it's delivering all the promise of that brand. Now, I'll say, since the naughty and nice list came out a couple of weeks ago, there have been some very, you know, unsettling stories about some of the culture that's growing up in Tesla at the manufacturing plants, and those shouldn't be ignored, and those are problems. So it brings up an interesting conversation about how the technical and experiential genius of a founder can also maybe come together with some cultural issues that are not okay, that seem to be going on at Tesla's manufacturing facilities. And I think we have to wait for more information to come out on that, but that's concerning for sure. But as a brand that's building a product and an experience based on a promise, the product and the experience that Tesla builds delivers in spades on the promise of a new way of experiencing a car, a new way of driving a car, buying a car, shopping for a car, owning a car. I mean, it's really remarkable.
That is interesting to think about and to really examine too. That's why I love this list. Now, further on to the nice side of things, you know, to some it might not come as a huge shock. Patagonia is right here on the list. And while I might, you know, be inclined to skip over that, I'm always interested when someone is known to be the best at whatever, and when it comes to being a good actor, Patagonia is usually on the list. But in making this list, what put them there for you? I mean, any new list, I'm always curious as to what goes into that.
Yeah, Patagonia, I think, Nick, is an amazing example of a company who says, this is what we care about. This is what's important to us as an organization. And we're going to make every decision we can make with that at the highest point of priority. It's not shareholder value. It's not making money. It's not increasing my revenue year over year by X percent to please the street. It's doing things that continually reinforce to our people and the world around us that this is what's important to us. And Patagonia puts the health and safety of the planet on top of everything. And they're going to make decisions, continually making decisions that may not be great for their short-term bottom line, but are really representative of their commitment to the planet. So if we kind of zoom out on the things that we think help brands earn a spot on the nice list, it's having a clear set of values, a clear set of priorities, and living and behaving in a way that's consistent with those priorities. And it's hard to find a better example than Patagonia of a brand who does exactly that.
That's great. And a good, once again, examination of the kind of why behind this. So another surprising entry on the, or a more surprising entry on the nice list, is Uber and Lyft. So talk a bit about how these companies that have sometimes had some, I would say, there may have been years where they might have been Uber, at least on another on the naughty side of it, but they're both over there on the nice side.
Yep, and you're absolutely right. Uber would have been right at the top of the naughty list not terribly long ago, for all the reasons that we know. But we would go back to this theme of brands that behave in a way that tell the world what they care about. Uber and Lyft did amazing things around the controversy in Texas, where, you know, Texas passed some very restrictive abortion laws, and Uber and Lyft both came out and said that they would pay their customers, pay for their customers to drive to abortion clinics, and that they would pay their drivers legal fees if they ended up getting sued. So you can, I don't want the naughty or nice list to be a political statement, because it's not meant to be. So no matter where you stand on abortion, if you go back to that theme of brands that are behaving in a way that says to the world, this is what I care about and this is what's important to me, so I'm going to behave in this way, and the consequences of behaving in this way may not be a short-term benefit to my bottom line, but I'm going to do it anyway, Uber and Lyft did it. And we give them credit for that. We give them credit, and they end up on the nice list, for what that's worth.
It's interesting, the political statement that you note, because it is interesting when you scan these, and not that alone is the compass, but it does seem like a lot of these are associated with values, actions. And I think that we sometimes are quick to dismiss, that's a political thing. Nobody wants that from us, from a brand. But even on it, it does seem like there's a consistent theme of standing for something about, well, I guess what you said about Patagonia, and probably why they're the easiest ones to track consistently through all of this. That would be an interesting thing to look at longitudinally, is how, you know, who stays on a list over time, because they would obviously be there. But it does seem like there's some consistency to beliefs, values, actions on the list. Would you agree?
I would 100% agree. I think you've put your finger on it. I think the idea that brands can live or die simply on the delivery of a functional benefit is, I think those days are, you know, for better or worse, those days are largely gone. And all the research that we see tells us that people are looking for brands to deliver certain functional benefits, of course. But on top of that, people are also wanting to know that the brands that they do business with represent a set of values that are consistent with their own. And they're asking brands harder questions than they ever have. So not only are they asking brands, what's the functional benefit of your product? They're also asking brands, where do you stand on things that are important in the world to me? And I want to work with companies and give my hard-earned money to companies who check both boxes, who make good things that work the way they're supposed to work, but also whose company stands for things that I think are important and is not afraid to put their money where their mouth is when it comes to those beliefs. So it's what you see with Nike and Colin Kaepernick. And you know, obviously they took something of a hit when people are posting videos of people burning their sneakers because they didn't agree with that stand. But I think there were people in the world who said, you know, I know you make good sneakers and shoes are great and shoes are important, but I want to wear Nikes now because Nike is a brand that believes in something that I believe in, if you came down on that side of the Colin Kaepernick controversy. So I think a lot of these are examples of brands who check both boxes, who make things that are good things, but who also behave in a way that makes it clear to me as their consumer or their prospect what they care about in the world. I think that's important now.
Yeah, we're not. Look, Patagonia. It's a great jacket, but I feel like that's not the conversation we're having about this brand and why they mean so much to people. It's everything. Yep. That you just said. Well, Matt,
yeah, and you know, we can we can argue all day about whether the jacket is good or not, but when I wear a Patagonia jacket, I say to the world, I am identified with this brand. And when I can identify with its values, it's really powerful.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Matt, I've given you maybe one of the hardest jobs of any guest, because it's a hard enough job when anyone comes on the show and I get my one gotcha question of what's a brand that's made you smile recently. And you've walked us through a handful of brands just now and really a variety of smiles. I always joke when someone says, is it a good smile, a bad smile? And with the naughty or nice list, I feel like we've had some naughty smiles at the expense of brands like Subway. We've had some happy smiles as well for some of the great things being done. Have I left you with any smiles that you can share with us beyond the brands that we've just hit?
Oh, I have so many smiles, Nick. So many smiles. There's not enough time left in your podcast for all the smiles that are out there. But the one that I will go back to is one that I know well. And I will shout out to my friends at Geico and my friends at the Martin Agency who have made me smile for 29 or 30 years. And they're doing it as well as they've ever done it. If you look at things like, you know, Scoop, There It Is, and the cultural juggernaut that idea has become. Geico has been a brand that has made me smile for decades, and they're continuing their run. So I have to call them out.
Awesome. That is a great smile and definitely worth calling out. Matt, where can folks go to learn more about who you are and what you do?
You can check us out, Nick, at brandfederation.com. We are a marketing and branding consulting company, working with clients all over the country. That's our web address, brandfederation.com.
Awesome. And we'll link up to that in our show notes at onbrandpodcast.com. Matt, thanks for being on brand with us.
Thanks, Nick. It's been a pleasure.
And if you like what you're hearing, if we've made you smile, if you think the On Brand podcast is hopefully not naughty, but maybe nice, remember you can always listen free on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you like to listen. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Gordon Glenister hosts an outstanding podcast called the Influence Global Podcast. Gordon, tell these fine folks what they're going to get when they listen.
We interview some amazing people from all around the world, whether they be influencers, content creators, brands, influencer platforms, anybody involved in the influencer industry. There's some fantastic guests that make a fine listen for you. You can find them on marketingpodcasts.net, or you can also find them on my own website, which is www.gordonglenister.com.
Or, of course, wherever you get your podcasts.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.